When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Everybody, welcome back to Stack in the Box College Football Edition. I'm your host, Reed Wald, joined as always every Tuesday, my guy, Cody Williams. Cody, how's it going, man? Crazy week of college football, as is to be expected, but I think there were some serious surprises that we didn't even see coming. So how's it going? How was your college football week two?
Dude, it was a wild ride. Like, I thought, you know, I think we went into the week thinking Texas, Michigan, that would probably be the most revealing game of the week. It turns out it wasn't. I mean, we learned a lot about both teams, I think. But at the end of the day, like, that was just the start. That was a little amuse-bouche, if you will, getting us started. And it was a great day, man. It was long, but it was good, man. How about you? How you doing?
I'm good. I'm still, I think, recovering from getting caught staying up late on the East Coast watching Oregon, Boise State. But yeah, it was a pretty chaotic day of college football. A lot going on, a lot of crazy finishes. But I think we will start at least at the top with Notre Dame losing to Northern Illinois, work our way through the slate. And I think what will be a good exercise is maybe got a few data points here. We've looked at a few of these teams now. We kind of know what some of these teams we think are about through non-conference play. Now let's look at the new college football playoff picture, see who's kind of positioning themselves to either take care of business, get into the playoff, or have played themselves out of it already and the rest of the season, not that they're done, but are really behind the eight ball and really need to pick it up. So I think that's going to be a really nice exercise. And then, of course, we'll get into our picks for this week. But I want to start with closing the book on week two and talking about this college football playoff discussion. Mm-hmm. Because I think the beauty in college football is Notre Dame. You see the highest of highs and the lowest of lows in 7 days. And that's Notre Dame going to College Station, beating Texas A&M, looking like I saw the reports. I think it may have even said in the show that it looks like they're going to go to the playoff. It looks like their ticket is already punched given their schedule and how much of an advantage they have winning this game. They then at home lose as 28-point favorites to Northern Illinois. They lose the game on the field, get, in my opinion, thoroughly outplayed. This was not a fluky result. They got absolutely taken to it. So Northern Illinois wins in the final seconds. They kick a field goal and they beat Notre Dame. We'll start before we talk about the rest of the country. Is Notre Dame's college football playoffs hopes done already? Is it over?
They're not done, but they're on life support. Like, they're definitely not alive and kicking at all. But, like, honestly, to me, I'm trying to look at it as not overreactionary as possible. And what I come away with is, like, okay, to me, now Notre Dame is 0-0, and they have to go 10-0 to make the college football playoff. That's kind of what I'm looking at, because I feel like the Northern Illinois loss basically negates what they did in the Texas A&M game. So if they can run the table, if they can get a win over Louisville, if they can get a win over USC, then sure. But the problem with that, and why they're probably more dead than not, is if you can lose to Northern Illinois, you can lose to absolutely anyone, and they don't have any margin for error left.
Yeah, I was thinking, I think 11-1, even with the loss to Northern Illinois, probably gets you in given the teams on their schedule. They do still play USC and Louisville, like you mentioned. I think 10-2 Notre Dame's out, though. I think no way they're getting in. So they have to run the table. And like you just mentioned, if you could lose to Northern Illinois, you're probably going to lose to somebody else along the way. And that doesn't even factor in that during the game, I want to say it was second half, Riley Leonard got hit pretty hard, tackled on his shoulder. I think it was his non-throwing shoulder. And I saw a report that he's a little dinged on his shoulder, and this is a guy that, you know, he takes shots. He, you know, is usually a run first quarterback. So this Notre Dame season might be getting away from him in a matter of days after looking like jumpstarting a really promising campaign in the first season of the extended playoffs. So I guess we're starting there with Notre Dame. Any other thoughts on the Irish losing outright to Northern Illinois, which I'm pretty confident will go down as the biggest upset loss of the entire season, being four touchdowns?
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be close. You know, I think someone should probably tell Mike Dimbrock that Riley Leonard is a run-first quarterback, because that was one of my biggest takeaways from the game. You're like, we've seen enough sample size of Riley Leonard to know that if you're just trying to air it out with him, it's probably not going to go well. And, like, Marcus Freeman's rightfully taking a lot of heat because he's lost a lot of these games in his short Notre Dame career. But, like, to me, that loss was so much on Mike Dimbrock. Like, what are you doing with that game plan? Like, that is – like, Riley Leonard – I feel very confident that Riley Leonard could have had a big game on the ground. They could have, Notre Dame as a whole could have had a big game on the ground, and they just decided to go to an aerial attack. It didn't make a whole lot of sense to me.
I think Notre Dame, after running Riley Leonard more than a dozen times that Texas A&M game, in such a grueling game on the road against a physical SEC opponent, I think they wanted to put Leonard on ice. It's a guy, I mentioned it, why I liked A&M. Riley Leonard had two foot procedures over the last calendar year. So I think that maybe they're trying to limit the amount of times he is running the ball and he is taking off with his legs. So you mentioned Leonard, he did have 11 carries, 16 yards, 20 of 32, 163 yards and two interceptions. This is not a drop back and chuck it around the field. This is a guy who kind of extends plays, and that's where his talent really shines. So bad game plan. I think it was a bit of a hangover after the A&M game. And you know it, they're down, more than a touchdown against Northern Illinois, and it's tough to just turn that around really fast. So there is a team, Cody and myself both think it's really, really up against it. They're about 3-1 to make the playoff now, and I think I would not be betting the yes. I think it's going to be uphill here for the Irish. A team that did enhance its hopes. I think they were pretty comfortably going to make it, but I think now have really jump-started their season. That's Texas. Texas goes to Michigan and absolutely handles the defending national champion, Wolverines. Cody, I know you were big on Texas going into this game, so I will leave the floor to you. What were some of your takeaways about Texas, and where are you changing your projection of where you see them moving forward now?
I'm not really changing my projection. I'll start there just because I still think, as good as I think this Texas team is and as impressive as that win was, I still think Georgia's probably a cut above. And, like, I already had Texas projected as the 5 seed. So, like, where am I going to move them up if I don't have them beating Georgia in the SEC championship game? So, like, they're kind of in the same spot there just by proxy. But in terms of, like, the national landscape, I'm – Texas might be the second best team in the country. What I saw in that game, the biggest thing that I saw, which I'm a Quinn Ewers guy, I have been for a while. I just believed in the talent for this time. That was the most poised I've ever seen Quinn Ewers look in his entire career. He looked absolutely poised. Like, he wasn't perfect. He did make some throws where you're like, you know, that probably wasn't the best idea. But, like, he didn't make the back-breaking mistake. He didn't try – when he did get pressured, it didn't look like someone who was panicking under that pressure and under duress. I thought he really showed a lot of poise throughout the game, even after the game when a kid comes up to him and does horns down. Yeah, like, he just showed a lot of poise and a lot of maturity, which – it's his third year in the program. He should be showing that poise and maturity, showing that growth. And I think when you see that, when you see the depth of the running back room at Texas, like, they lost CJ Baxter before the season started. Jaden Blue went out early in this game, and they still kept running the ball down Michigan's throat. Like, that's not something that's easy to do. And then, like, they reloaded a wide receiver. You have all these guys. You have a Ryan Wingo coming in as a true freshman making plays. You have this defense that, granted, Michigan I don't think is that big of a test for any defense at this point with Davis Warren and whatever they're doing on that side of the ball, but they absolutely handled their business. They left no doubt about it on the field. Mm-hmm. That unit is, even if it's lesser than last year, it's not a dramatic drop off. So I think Texas might be the second best team in the country.
I'm still not there. I don't know how much you could really take from that Michigan game. It was, they could not run the ball still. And I will say they did a great game plan. And you mentioned Quinn Ewers, the most poised he's ever looked. I agree. There were, I believe it was both touchdown throws. Maybe one was called back. But he extended plays. He looked downfield. He found a guy wide open that, you know, once the play broke down. So I think Texas' game plan was great. And I never doubted that. I'm still not sold that this offensive line is so perfect. I think that Texas did a good job of spreading Michigan out, avoiding throwing at Will Johnson, and basically offsetting Michigan's elite pass rush, an elite run-stopping unit on the front with the likes of Mason Graham and Kenneth Grant. So I think Texas executed a really sharp game plan. But when there's no resistance from the opposing offense, like, is it that hard? Like, you could tell very quickly that this was a Michigan offense that wasn't going to go anywhere no matter what. And I don't know if Michigan's offense is really going to go anywhere against anybody. Yeah. So I'm impressed with Texas. They passed the test and they avoided what I think was a potentially tricky environment. But I wouldn't say I learned so much about them more as they just passed the test and let's get to the next one. I still don't know if I'm willing to call them the second best team in the country or anything like that. But again, this is a team where their schedule sets up where even 9-3 probably gets them in. So to me, a lot of these teams, there's only at most a 4 or 5 game season for some of these teams. You passed one test, right? You're just that much closer now to get into the dance. So Texas, God respect it. They're that much closer to getting to the dance now.
Yeah, and I think, like, I guess one of the two things. One, I think a lot of how you feel about Texas after that game comes into what you thought about them in the preseason. I was high on Texas in the preseason and higher on you. And so, like, a little bit of confirmation bias there, I think you could say. The other thing I think I would say would be when you look at this Texas team and you look at what they did last year, it's looking like, and, you know, this is maybe a little bit too, you know, 3,000-foot view of everything, but, like, they look like a program, like an Alabama, like a Georgia, where there's no drop off. There's no, like, when you turn the roster over, you're just reloading. You're not rebuilding. And
fair point.
And to me, that means a lot in terms of, you know, you talk about Sark having this game plan. I trust Sark to have a good game plan in every single game he plays because he's one of the best play callers in the country. So, like, I trust that so much and what they're doing with this program that leads me to believe that what I saw from Texas was not like, yes, I think that Michigan is far worse than we maybe projected. Like, I wasn't high on Michigan, but I think they might be actually like 7-5, 8-4 looking down the barrel of that. But, like, at the end of the day, like, Texas went into the Big House and they left no doubt. And I think that's the big key. Like, it wasn't a, oh, good game plan, and then we packed it up and went home. No, they left no doubt on the field who was the far superior team on that.
I think that's a fair point. And to me, my rub with Texas, because they're definitely amongst the top teams in the country. My rub is, all right, they're going into a new SEC schedule here where the hits are going to start coming. Even, let me just pull up Texas schedule real quick, but even their easier quote-unquote games in SEC play, it's no walk in the park. It's different than when you're playing, like, you know, the Baylors or the crappy Big 12 teams. You know, the all of a sudden your difficult games, like, all right, you're still playing Florida at Arkansas. Arkansas nearly knocked off Oklahoma State. Kentucky. I know these teams seem bad, but there's still SEC caliber athletes there that, to me, it's like the buildup and the marginal returns of and the diminishing returns of an SEC schedule. That's where I want to see that's where I'm going to be wrong on my Texas take is, can they hold up an SEC play with the body blows, with the diminished running back room, with some questions I think on the defensive line? Like, where's that going to come into play? That's really my big question with Texas, which is why I think you strike first here. You get the first one, but mine is more of like a longer term view on Texas.
And I think that makes complete sense. Like, we don't know what this is going to look like for Texas in the SEC. Like, it is a completely different schedule, completely different demands. Like, I know Texas Tech has given Texas trouble, but, like, Texas Tech is a bad football team this year. Exactly. And, like they don't have that on their schedule. So, like, yeah, there is something to that. But I have a lot of faith. And, again, going back to the point of program building, when you have the depth to turn it over like they did from last year to this year and still look this promising, this good, like, that tells me that your program's in enough shape that even if there are some bumps and bruises, they might be able to still withstand them. We don't know that, and I understand why you're hesitant because we don't know that.
Yeah. No, totally. Two other teams that I think are looking the part, and I think they maybe aren't getting as much – notoriety, just maybe given their coaches, maybe given their recent form. But Miami and Ole Miss, I think, are two teams you can lump together. I think people are like almost they don't want to give the credit yet. They don't trust this team yet because, like, they've been hurt so many times by the likes of Mario Cristobal and the likes of Lane Kiffin before that they want to buy all the way in. But I'll tell you one thing. This Ole Miss offense looks absolutely filthy. Looks absolutely filthy. And Miami, which I, Cody, we were talking, I wanted to see it on the field before I really reacted. And it's only one data point, and Florida might not be as great as some had hoped, or even not as good as some had hoped. But it looks like that Miami offense might be legit. And then you look at the rest of the ACC. Miami might be favored in every game and might be in the ACC championship game. Are they – let's start Miami first. Are they making the playoff? Like, is it fair to say that? Miami, where are they in terms of odds? I believe they're minus price to make the postseason. I'll pull up that number while I pass over you. What are your thoughts on the Hurricanes?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to, like, be too reactionary, but yeah. It almost looks like a cakewalk to the playoff at this point because the ACC looks so down. Like, I think the one thing that was really enlightening to me is you look at an NC State team who got absolutely boat raced by Tennessee when Nico didn't even play that well. Like, he played fine, but he didn't even play that well. Turned the ball over twice. Like, and they still – NC State still lost by 41. To me, what I'm seeing at the top of the ACC outside of Clemson's defense and outside of Miami's roster is there is a lack of like elite talent. Like there's a lack of the dudes, for lack of a better term, that you see in the SEC on basically every roster. And Miami has the dudes. And so when you have the dudes, that is a big game changer in a conference that looks as weak as the ACC does right now.
Yeah, I think – this is going to be a tough Miami minus 150 to make the playoff. I look at the opponents on the schedule. They're just not there. And if this team is as talented as it should be, because I think we agree in that on paper, Miami firmly top 10 roster in the entire country. They have the guys on paper to compete for a national championship, not win, but to be in the mix. Mm-hmm. They play to that ceiling. They're going to get there. It's can you avoid that one slip up that – because I think the margin for error with the ACC teams is very low. It's can you avoid that one slip up that is going to cost you? Because I'm not absolutely certain 10-2 ACC gets in. And that this is really centering now around Clemson and Miami. Even I guess it depends on the sequencing and depends on where the SEC and Big Ten lands, but – this conference just isn't as impressive as I think some had hoped. And I think it was pretty low expectations to begin with.
No, I think honestly, I've said going into the year that because I guess like the variance or the unknowns at the top of the ACC, that the ACC is a one bid league when it comes to the 12 team playoff. Like it's the automatic qualifier and they're not getting an at large. I've said that from the jump. And I think that's kind of what it is. And when you look at a Clemson, they very clearly still have a flaw. Like, I know Cade Klubnik put up ungodly numbers this past week after getting boat raced by Georgia, but when you put them up against a competition level like Miami, and if that were to be the ACC championship game, I don't trust Cade Klubnik in that spot. I do trust Cam Ward in that spot, but I also don't trust Mario Cristobal in that spot. But I do think, like, it's very clearly separating to where it looks like Miami or Clemson, and then everyone else is very much like a tier, maybe two tiers below them.
What about Ole Miss? What are your takeaways on the Rebels through two games? Two very easy games at that, but still.
Two very easy games, but like you said, this offense looks like a death machine, man. Like Jackson Dart looks like a dude who has absolutely leveled up this year. Jackson Dart looks like, maybe the front runner for the Heisman Trophy. I think that's it's week three. We're going into week three. Like, we've got a long runway ahead of us. But, like, the numbers he's putting up are ridiculous. He completed – was it his first 24 passes he completed last week?
He set some record because I had Ole Miss in the game. So he set some record. I don't know how many he got to before there was an incompletion, but it was like pitch and catch all day.
Yeah, and then the flip side of that, which we have not seen, which is where I still have some questions about Ole Miss, is the defense. And I think that's kind of the Ole Miss trademark under Lane Kiffin, basically, to this point. But we do know that they went into the portal this offseason, and they got Princely, I'm blanking on his last name, the kid from Florida, Florida's best edge rusher last year. Mm-hmm. They got a Walter Nolan. They beefed up this defense and really addressed the holes on that side of the ball. So I am curious to see what that looks like against a offense that is capable, which they have not played yet. But at the end of the day, like, this offense is going to put a scare into anyone that faces, because I think it's an offense that no matter the level of competition is going to be able to attack you.
Yeah, this is another team where I'm interested. The top 22 guys, like the starting 11 on each side, is as good as anyone. Mm-hmm. It's the depth and the drop off because this is a transfer portal built roster. That's where I'm curious if this team can hold up over the course of a season. So it's like a team where like the injury report, like it always matters, but maybe this team matters a little bit more depending on the injuries and who gets dinged up over the course of a year. Two teams with young quarterbacks I want to hit really quickly before we move on to our picks for this week. Nebraska and Tennessee, probably biggest winners of week two. You can make a case in like terms of they pass their test with their young quarterbacks. Nebraska beats Colorado 28-10, probably should have won by a lot more. Tennessee absolutely stomps, like you mentioned, against NC State 51-10. I think these are two teams. Nebraska, the path is a little bit difficult, more difficult, but you look at their schedule, it's set up very nicely for them to go on a bit of a run here and be undefeated heading into Ohio State at, I believe, 7-0. So playoff conversation is going to start around the Cornhuskers very quickly. And then Tennessee, obviously, as an SEC team, this is a team I was high on going into the year. Mm-hmm. I think looks better than I could have possibly hoped. And their schedule, to me, is starting to break a certain way where I think Tennessee – yeah, we're talking playoff. We're talking Heisman favorite. We're talking Nico. Give me all the Vol stock. I'm here now, and I'll be here all year.
Any Vol stock you don't buy, I'll take because I'm right there with you, man. I did a projected playoff bracket yesterday, and I had Tennessee as the 7th seed. So if that tells you anything about how I feel about the Vols, like I've said it before, and I'll say it again. Nico is as like close for being a young quarterback, he's as close to Hendon Hooker as I could have wanted after two and a half games of starting. And so like you have that, but what the contrast is from the Hendon Hooker team in 2022 is this defense is like exponentially better. That pass rush is unbelievably good. You've got James Pierce up there, sure, but that entire defensive front was just terrorizing NC State through that entire game. That's power four competition. That's one of the better teams in the ACC. You know, take that with a grain of salt, but it is one of the better teams in the ACC. And they just manhandled them. It was no contest. And so when you have that defense with the power of Nico and Josh Heupel's offense, this team's dangerous. And then I'll go to Nebraska. I'm not going to have a playoff conversation with Nebraska because I don't think they're quite there yet. I think there are steps that have to be taken, in my opinion. And one of those steps is, hey, Nebraska, make a bowl game. Comfortably make a bowl game because you haven't done it since the Obama administration. So, like, go out there, make a bowl game, and then we'll talk. My big takeaway with Nebraska from that Colorado game is it reminded me a lot of when we saw Colorado play the upper echelon of the Pac-12 last year. And that's a really good sign for Nebraska that that's what that game looked like because that shows a distinct turnaround and distinct trend up for what the Huskers team is.
And we both liked Nebraska going into the game, but that game was over 30 seconds into the game. Yeah, like that game was never competitive. And 28-10 doesn't do justice. Really quick, Nebraska schedule, Northern Iowa this week, Illinois in a short week, at Purdue, Rutgers, a bye week at Indiana, and then it's that big game at Ohio State in – what date is that? October 26th. So that's – you know, we'll see. It's – a tricky schedule because I think the Big Ten's pretty good, but we'll see how this goes for Nebraska. We're just a team to keep an eye on.
At Kroger Pharmacy, Care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details. At Kroger Pharmacy, Care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
All right. Really quick before I move on, any G5 takeaways? I know Boise State was your big pick to go from the G5 ranks. They lose to Oregon as expected, but they look pretty good doing it. Any thoughts on the Broncos or any other G5 team with hopes of making the college football playoff?
So still high on the Broncos. The defense still worries me, but I think that, you know, the fact that you're going out there and losing by three to Oregon, you and I talked about this when I'm, you know, when I put forth the Boise State to make the playoff bet before week one. I think that result is not going to penalize Boise State at all. I think in the AP voting, they still finished 27th, like right outside in the others receiving votes, even after a loss. So like that tells you that people are still high on this team. If we're only need the highest ranked group of five team, that's a feather in their cap. Texas State has me a little bit worried. Texas State looks like a wrecking machine. Texas State's probably going to be Arizona State on Thursday night. I was very like, if the money line was a little juicier, that might've been my underdog pick this week, but I was looking through some PFF grades. They have two of the top 10 graded edge rushers in pass rush grade through the first 2 weeks of the season. And then you have Jordan McLeod, who we saw run through G5 competition at JMU all of last year. So, like, man, G.J. Kenny's got something cooking there. That has me more worried about Boise State than Boise State itself does.
We were there. We were there first. The Neil Armstrong of Texas State futures. Yeah, this is a big one on Thursday night for my Bobcats at home against Arizona State, who also looks very good. But I think this is a bit of a step up in class for the Sun Devils, even against after being SEC Mississippi State. So we'll see how this goes on the road short week. Texas State, I watched about three quarters of that game against UTSA. They won 49-10. They could have won 70-10 if they wanted to.
Oh, yeah.
they could have. They stopped running it up on UTSA. They could have really lit up the Roadrunners. So give me all the Bobcat stock. Tennessee and Texas State. Those are where they're paying for the honeymoon. Good stuff there on the group of five. Things that are not paying for my honeymoon right now, though, are my weekly picks. What did we push? We each went 3-3 last week, I think.
Oh no, I went 5-1 last week.
Just kidding. You went 5-1. I don't have the records up in front of me. I deleted them. how coincidental is that? So I got 4-8. You're 8-4. So I'm back a little bit still. It's early though. We got some time. So oh, yeah. We got five picks this week. It's a bit of a not so great slate. And I don't want to say that because, you know, chaos is probably going to ensue. And it's going to end up being a crazy slate. But I think it's the last gasp of non-conference play. And, you know, teams, they had their big marquee non-conference game. Now you have some like last gasp of rivalry games, Oregon State, Washington State, and all that stuff. But I think we're starting to see a bit of a lull before conference play picks up next week. A few teams have some bye weeks as well. So let's start, though, with what is a non-conference game between two conference members. This is the second week in a row this is going to happen.
Yeah.
This is like sickos committee type facts. But you have Arizona, Kansas State playing. And this also happened to Utah Baylor last week, where this game was scheduled beforehand, before the Big 12 acquired teams from the Pac-12. So this game was already on the book. So despite being in the same conference, this game will be a non-conference game. This game will not count towards the Big 12 standings, which is pretty important.
Just a little bit. Yeah.
In a wide open Big 12, this is pretty consequential. So it is non-conference, but it still means something for two teams that I think have some questions still. I'm still waiting to see it from these teams. So Kansas State laying 7, total up to 58.5 here between the two Wildcats, two Big 12 Wildcat teams. Mm-hmm. Cody, what are your thoughts here? You get the honors of sharing your pick first as you lead by 4 games against me. So I really got to pick it up here.
Yeah, I'm going over 58.5, man. I know the total's ticked up and it could keep ticking up and I'm probably still going to take the over. When you go back to week one, we saw Arizona really struggle with the mobility of Devin Dampier, the New Mexico quarterback. And now you look at Kansas State. And Kansas State is a team that I think people rightfully have questions for, but I was digging into it a little bit. Avery Johnson, I believe, is still under a dozen designed runs through the first two games combined. I feel like Kansas State has been holding some stuff back with Avery Johnson, because when you looked at going into the season with Avery Johnson, you look pretty historically at Kansas State quarterbacks. The quarterback run game is a huge part of what they like to do. And the fact that Avery Johnson hasn't been unleashed just tells me that there's something percolating here. There's something cooking that they haven't quite unleashed. And with the trouble that Arizona had there, with Arizona's defense having a pretty poor tackling grade this season so far, I do think that Avery Johnson has like a breakout type of game in this one, and that Kansas State is able to show more offensively than they have because of that. And on the flip side of that, I was looking at Kansas State's numbers in pass defense, and they struggle a little bit. And you have arguably the best receiver in the country in Teteroa McMillan with Noah Fifita and their connection. That's just unbelievable. Wasn't that unbelievable against Northern Arizona, but you know, we'll throw that by the wayside because, again, probably another scenario where they're not trying to put too much on film. But I think that both of these teams have the perfect avenues to put up points on the board. Both of these defenses, I have a lot of questions about. I'm confident in what these offenses' ceilings are. So the over was an easy call for me.
Yeah, I had Tulane in outright in the game against Kansas State. They should have won. Tulane was chucking the ball all over the yard. Mm-hmm. They averaged 10.36 yards per dropback. They had a 14% explosive play rate against Kansas State last week. That's 93rd percentile compared to games last year. So this is elite offense from Tulane. Now you got an Arizona team that I think is going to be much worse than last year's roster. But yeah, with Fifita and McMillan, Arizona held some guys out against Northern Arizona, so I think that contributed to the clunkiness of that game against Northern Arizona. I think there's going to be big plays all day for this Arizona offense against a Kansas State defense that is a big play funnel now. If Tulane's going to cook them, what is Arizona with McMillan and Fifita going to do? And then on the other side, though, Arizona, a defense that really, really came together strong last year. That's not this team. Currently, again, they play New Mexico and they play Northern Arizona. They are 110th in tackling grade so far this season. And while I have my fair share of concerns about Avery Johnson, the passer, he can run the ball. DJ Giddens can run the ball. Colorado transfer Dylan Edwards can run the ball. I think Kansas State, they could just run up and down the field on Arizona. So 50.5, I'm also on the over here as well. I'm with you here. So I got to make up some ground, but I this is where I was looking as well. So I didn't want to go against you here in any way because – we're talking side. I have some concern about Arizona, but I don't know if I could trust Kansas State laying such a big number against an explosive offense that can maybe go shot for shot here. So at over a touchdown, no thank you. I don't want to get involved, but I think both offenses could have some serious success here. So I'll go over on the Friday night game. I believe it's on Fox too. So, you know, standalone game will be really good to see both these teams as they gear up for Big 12 play.
No, absolutely. And then, you know, you mentioned the Arizona defense, like, a lot of that unit that was really impressive is now in Seattle with their head coach, Jed Fish. So, you know, that probably played a big factor in that.
Yeah, and game day on Saturday morning will be aired from South Carolina as the Gamecocks, they steamroll Decleats, absolutely trounce Kentucky on the road. They went 31-6. They now get rewarded with some game day with the Bayou Bengals, LSU Tigers coming to town. Producer Joanne is thrilled about the fact that game day is coming to South Carolina. We got a spread of 7, total of 50.5. South Carolina's defense looks to be among the top half of the SEC. LSU, I still think, has some questions here. What are your thoughts, Cody, going on in this game?
Yeah, I got to be honest with you. No offense to producer Joanne. And we told her we wouldn't say anything negative about the Gamecocks. But I think last week had a lot more to do with Kentucky than it did South Carolina. I think Kentucky might be in a bad place right now. And that's unfortunate with game day coming to town. But I do think that I'm going with the LSU team total over 29.5 because I'm still not fully trusting of this South Carolina defense. Now, to be clear, I'm going with the team total because I still don't trust this LSU defense either. Even if I'm not like super high on the South Carolina offense, I do think that there still will be points scored in this game. And so I'm kind of staying away from a side in terms of, you know, the spread with it being at a touchdown. That's sketchy to me. I don't trust this LSU team enough, but I do trust that Garrett Nussmeier has still looked good in every game that he's played this so far this year through 2 games. And I had, again, kind of going back to the confirmation bias point about Texas, I was high on Garrett Nussmeier coming into the season, and I haven't seen any reason to think otherwise. Mm. I'm high on the athletes that LSU has at wide receiver. And you look at this South Carolina defense and you kind of dig into the grades a little bit, their tackling, their coverage have not been anything to write home about. So I think that there is a little bit of a chance that LSU is able to break open some big plays. And all I need is four scores and a field goal, and I hit this number. I'm here for that. And I think that LSU, I think this game has a chance to frankly get a little bit loose. And so with the total team total being under 30, I kind of like that play a little bit more than anything else on the board.
I'm going to go in a different direction than you.
Okay.
I respect the South Carolina defense. I think this defense is rock solid. And I think there's something to be said. Now, I'll talk about the offense in a sec, but I think there's something to be said about LSU's inability to run the ball. This is now two games now that they've been shut down. And look, I think Garrett Nussmeier is really good also. I don't know if going on the road, Brian Kelly is going to open this one up and maybe allow South Carolina. What game were we talking about? Was it last week where we were talking game script? I can't remember now.
Was it Texas, Michigan?
Yeah, and I lost that one because of a ridiculous fumble. But besides the point. So we'll see if I can get it right here. So I think we're going to see Brian Kelly take a slow approach to this one, because to me, it's South Carolina. It's similar to that Texas-Michigan approach where you don't want to open the door for South Carolina to get ahead and lean on their defense. Also, you have the home crowd there. We know it's going to be rocking there. So yeah. I don't think LSU is going to take a real aggressive approach. Now, the game could get loose late in the game. So my angle, we'll see, this hasn't worked so far for me this year, but first half under 25.5 between LSU and South Carolina. I think we're going to see South Carolina really struggle to move the ball. Lenora Sellers cannot throw the ball downfield. So I think it's going to be a lot of three and outs, a lot of just punting back and forth, field position. But I respect this South Carolina defense quite a bit. And if it's going to be Nussmeier throwing the ball around, I just don't know if the explosive plays are going to be there early. And maybe South Carolina could get behind the sticks, play some field position, maybe settle for a couple field goals there. And this game stays under the total. I just think slow approach, very methodical. Again, I don't think LSU wants to give South Carolina like hope early. I also have my concerns about what's the state of LSU, because they beat Nichols 44-21, but that game was much closer than the scoreboard would indicate. I know they get some margin at the end, but this game at halftime was 23-14 LSU. So it wasn't like LSU really stepped on their throat early. So I think that maybe this could be a slow effort. It's their first true road game. I think defense thrives early. Maybe LSU pulls away late. And, I mean, listen, Lenora Sellers could definitely give the ball to the other team in some fortuitous field position. But I'll go first half under as my look here as South Carolina celebrates game day coming to town.
I don't hate it. And I think with the environment with game day coming to town, we also could, frankly, just see some lemon booty early in this game. Like, and just like a lot of tense offense that just isn't free flowing and loose. So I don't hate the play. The one thing I will say in terms of Brian Kelly, trying to predict a Brian Kelly's game script is not a venture I'm ever willing to go down after a man who threw the ball 30 times in a hurricane. Like, I just, I can't, you never know what you're going to get with old BK.
Yeah. So we'll see how this one goes. Game days there. The other big game on Saturday afternoon is Alabama taking the trip to Madison to take on my Wisconsin Badgers. You can see the helmet behind me. The badge catching over 2 touchdowns, 15.5 total sitting in the low 50s at, as I scroll up, it is sitting at 50.5. So similar total to the LSU South Carolina game, Wisconsin given far less of a chance at home against Alabama. These two met in 2015, my freshman year of college. Alabama rolled on a neutral field, but they're coming to Madison. So we'll see how this goes. Cody, what are your thoughts on Alabama, Wisconsin?
I think it's too many points, man. And I know you probably don't share that sentiment. Maybe you're protecting yourself as a Wisconsin graduate, but I'm taking Wisconsin plus 15.5. This isn't an overreaction to what happened against USF last week, because frankly, I think that what we've seen from Alabama to this point is that we've seen them face two opponents who couldn't take advantage of what I have seen as the biggest weakness. I went back and watched a little bit of the film against Western Kentucky, which was a blowout in favor of Alabama. Western Kentucky missed a ton of throws that were open. This is a young secondary that obviously had to replace the likes of Kool-Aid McKinstry, had to replace Terrion Arnold, had to replace Caleb Downs, who's now in Columbus. And I think we've seen it. We just haven't seen a quarterback who's been able to take advantage of it. Byron Brown ran well last week. He did not throw the ball well. He was awful as a passer last week. And I'm not saying Tyler Van Dyke is a world beater, because I think we know that he is not. But I do think that Phil Longo is the type of guy who can scheme up the right routes to attack those areas and get Tyler Van Dyke the right throws to make with the headset communication. I think that Wisconsin is going to be able to put up a few points in this game. And on the flip side of that, this Wisconsin defense is good enough to limit what we've seen from Alabama, particularly if this offensive line for Alabama is not fully healthy, which it has not been to this point in the season. We saw them, USF, one of the big things they were able to do, particularly through the first three quarters, is get into the backfield. And if USF is able to do that, Wisconsin's definitely going to be able to do that. So when I look at this game, I still think Alabama's going to win. Don't get me wrong. This is not an upset pick. But when I'm seeing a number over two touchdowns, I think that it is a little bit of an overreaction to what Alabama has done, and in the wrong way. Like, you look at a 42-16 scoreline, you look at a 63-0 scoreline, like, oh, Alabama death machine. I'm not quite sure that I'm there with them. And I think Wisconsin is solid enough to stay within two touchdowns, particularly at Camp Randall.
Yeah, I could see it. The issue with Wisconsin is that Tyler Van Dyke has a noodle arm, and he doesn't have the arm strength to test what I think is, at the moment, relative to expectations, a bad Alabama secondary relative to what we come to know from Alabama. I don't think that this is like college football playoff level secondary for the Crimson Tide. So I think Wisconsin, I think they're going to be forced to take a conservative approach, wait to, you know, pick your shots. I'm going to stick with what hasn't been working. I'm going to take the first half under for a lot of the reasons you said, though. I don't know if Alabama's offensive line is up to snuff. Caden Proctor missed last week's game against South Florida. Don't know if he's going to be available for this one, but I'm not sure they're going to be able to generate much offense on the road. I think the deep shots aren't going to be there with Wisconsin's 3-3-5 defense. I think they're going to be able to limit the explosiveness from Alabama, keep everything in front of them. And on the other side, I don't know if Wisconsin has the explosiveness to really go shot for shot for Alabama. And that's why I ended up staying off the spread. Especially if this game gets wonky, I think Wisconsin's going to be forced to try and establish the run with Chesma Lucy. And we'll see how that goes. Play underneath with Tyler Van Dyke, because this offense is still air raid principles where it's quick, dink and dunk their way down the field. I don't know how that's going to go against Alabama, how many successful drives you're going to have. I'm going to be watching. I'm going to be hoping it works. I doubt it, but we'll see. So I'm going to go first half under 25.5. We'll see how it goes. I just think, again, I think Wisconsin's going to at least early be able to set a tone of a physical grinded out game. But then when, you know, I think the game script could get away from late where it becomes like, all right, Tyler Van Dyke's going to try and win this with his arm and we'll see how it goes.
So I'm with you on this. And I think we're actually seeing the game pretty similarly. I think this could be a case where, like, you never feel like Wisconsin's necessarily in the game, like has a chance to win the game, but it's still close enough on the scoreboard to cover 15.5. Like, that's kind of what I see happening.
I was down on Alabama going into the year, and I'm more down on them now. I haven't been impressed at all. A lot of things you said. But, again, I think it's more the scoring from Alabama's side. I agree that there's been some deep shots there, but it's more like they've scored, what is that, 105 points now?
Yeah.
I don't, like, really buy that necessarily. No, that's a lot of, like, really just deep shot broken plays. And, I mean, they got three touchdowns in the last 5 minutes against South Florida. That's also a really aggressive Todd Orlando defense that they're going to blitz you to death. So there's going to be deep shots over the secondary. So I'm not sold either on Alabama. We'll see how it goes. First half under, not very – this one I'm much less confident in than the other one, but we'll see. Okay. Two more. We hit both of our underdogs outright.
Yeah.
Last week. You had Syracuse, which I liked, and I had Illinois, which I can't remember if you liked or not.
I did. Yeah. You did?
Yeah. Look at Orange Crush. So we go again, a bit of a flip in terms of who's going for, like, the longer shot and who's going for the short shot. So, Cody, why don't you share with us who you're going with your underdog pick?
Yeah. Give me the North Texas Mean Green at +285 to beat Texas Tech. Okay. Feel like it's going a little underreported how bad Texas Tech has been so far this year through 2 weeks. They won 52-51 in overtime against Abilene Christian by stopping a two-point conversion try. Then they got their doors blown off by a Washington State team that we kind of thought was going to be in shambles this year, you know, conference-less, essentially losing Cam Ward, just kind of not really looking like the Wazoo that we've seen before. And they lost by three. Texas Tech lost the three scores to them last week. Now you go up against a North Texas team that I think, just quite frankly, with the pace they play at, with the explosive plays that they can generate, is going to give Texas Tech fits in this game. When you look at the PFF numbers for Texas Tech, it's abysmal in defense. They have the second.
They're hurt.
Say what? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Sure. Brooks might not play.
Yeah. Shorthanded on the defensive side of the ball for a unit that is already the second worst tackling grade, according to PFF, and the worst coverage grade. You know what that's not going to work well with? Against a North Texas offense that is ranked, second in success rate on dropbacks so far through the first 2 weeks of the season. Red Raiders 111th in defensive success rate against dropbacks. So, like, I think North Texas is going to be able to throw the ball all over this Texas Tech team. I think the only reason this line is where it is because Texas Tech is a Power Four team. But I absolutely believe that this is going to be, at worst, a shootout. And I honestly could see North Texas pulling away in this game. But, like, to me, when I look at what I've seen from these two teams, North Texas is just the better team. And so if I'm getting a plus 285 number, I'm taking it all the way to the bank.
I'm looking up how far Frisco to Lubbock is. All right, it's pretty far. It's 5 hours. I was about to say,
probably farther than you think. Texas is always like that.
5 hours away, so part of my handicap goes out the window. No, I agree with you, though. North Texas, listen, Chandler Morris has stepped in really nicely with the mean green in this offense. So I think this North Texas offense is stock up. I had them in week one against South Alabama. This Texas Tech team, maybe wait for an injury report, but we'll see how this shakes out for Texas Tech. This could be a real loss season, and it could be once Texas State finishes their college football playoff game against Texas, G.J. Kinney might be taking the job in Lubbock and heading to the Big 12. We'll see how that goes. For me, I'm going much smaller. Team I really like, team I'm high on against a team I'm down on. Give me ECU as a home pup against App State, plus 115, I believe it is, 120. Yeah, I like ECU here against App State. ECU's offense, I mentioned in our Seiko's pick last week, is playing at a frenetic tempo, is super efficient. The only thing they have wrong with it is that Jake Garcia, the quarterback, former Miami and Missouri transfer, keeps throwing interceptions. I believe he now has 6 through 2 games. If he could clean that up, though, look out for the Pirates. This offense, though, they outgained ODU by over 200 yards. They only won by 6 because of the turnovers. Mm-hmm. So, look, is this guy just a gunslinger and he's going to make mistakes and he's going to – it's going to be boom or bust? Maybe that's just what he is. That's okay. The offense is still good enough that's almost offsetting that. Look at what Clemson just did to App State.
Yeah.
A lot. But it also wasn't that they were taking deep shots, so I think – John David Baker, the new OC at ECU, can scheme up some plays short of the line of scrimmage, avoid those mistake downfield shots for Garcia. So I like ECU. I mean, the defense we know is nasty. They were top 30 in success rate last year, and it looks like they're picking up where they left off there. Give me the Pirates. Arg. I think they win the game outright. Obviously, it's a small spread, but I'm confident in this team. I think they're the better team. App State might be. They had some turnover on the offensive line. They lose their star running back, Nate Noel. This team might be much, much worse than when they were the preseason Sunbelt favorite. So it's a team that I think it's arrow pointing down, and it's a team in ECU that I think arrow is pointing way up.
You said it, man. Like, I think that this is not even, like, necessarily about the Clemson result because, like, we're also talking about just a huge difference in caliber of athletes there. But, like, at the end of the day, like, this App State team – this program, I should say, has made a living out of getting ready for those games, being prepared, and at least showing some signs of life. They had no life last week. And, like, that's the takeaway I'm taking from the Clemson game is that if you're this lifeless against a team that – or against a program, a bigger program that you traditionally get your teams up for, that's a problem, and it tells me that this roster just isn't where it has been in previous years. So, yeah, and on the ECU side of things, like – it's literally just don't turn the ball over, and this game could honestly get away from App State.
Last one, Sicko's pick.
Oh, yeah.
On you. What do you got?
We're going back to the Wolfpack. Two words, baby. Nevada plus 16.5 against Minnesota. I'm liking these dogs, these G5 dogs against Power 4 competition that I don't think is very good. Minnesota, I don't think is very good. Looking at all the PFF grades and, you know, the metrics and stuff like that, they are so inflated for Minnesota that it is infuriating, because when you dig into it, they're all terrible against in the loss to North Carolina, and they're great against a 48-0 win over Rhode Island. You know what I'm not putting stock in? Beating Rhode Island by 48 points. No, thank you. I look at what this Minnesota team has been doing, what Nevada has been doing. Jeff Choate's defense, with him taking over this program, the biggest coaching upgrade I think I've ever seen, honestly. Like, it is just night and day from what this team was last year when they couldn't stop anyone. Last week they lost to Georgia Southern 20-17, a Georgia Southern team that we saw put up 40 plus against Boise State the week prior. Then you have Brendan Lewis at quarterback, who has been causing fits for every defense that he's played. Even if he's not a perfect player, his mobility really causes a lot of problems. I look at this Minnesota team, and Max Brosmer, who they brought in from New Hampshire at quarterback, I frankly just don't think he's very good. I think if you put him against any kind of schematic advantage, which I think Jeff Choate will absolutely deploy against him, I think that Max Brosmer is going to have some problems in this game. And getting more than two touchdowns in this, I think Nevada's defense and a team that has just kept every game they played in close, even if Minnesota is the best team they played to this point, I think the Wolfpack are absolutely alive to keep this one much closer than this. If it was in single digits, it would not surprise me.
I agree. Gonna bet this one with you when it hits 17. Nevada had a post-game win expectancy against Georgia Southern of 91.3%, according to Bill Connolly. So this is a Nevada team that's playing way, way above their skis here. And Minnesota's a team I'm happy to fade as a big favorite. They play slow. There's no explosiveness. I know Darius Taylor's back, but I would say the one rub I have with Nevada is the travel's a little weird. This is their fourth game, obviously. They traveled to Troy, back home, back now to Minnesota. It's just a lot of moving around. That's the rub. But again, like, should Minnesota really be laying over two touchdowns right now? Like, are they good enough to do that? So I'm totally with you. I think Nevada could definitely keep this one competitive. Minnesota could win this game pretty easily, but it's a low total. That means it's total 43.5. That means you're expecting Minnesota to do like all the scoring.
I can't trust that
defense. Are you kidding me?
No sir.
No, I'm with you here on Nevada. Mine's grosser for sure. Mine's definitely grosser.
Oh yeah, it's real gross.
I'm taking Wyoming plus 10.5 against BYU. Wyoming lost by a million to Arizona State. They lost to Idaho at home. I don't care. Total below 40. And you're giving me BYU laying more than two touchdowns. This is a huge upgrade for BYU, a team that was laying it closed inside of 17 against Southern Illinois. I know they won. I watched the game. They should have won and probably covered, but not by 20-plus like they did in the game. Mm-hmm. And they beat SMU on the road as closing as 12.5-point underdogs. Was that, like, super impressive? They won 18-15. I think it says more about SMU more than anything.
Mm-hmm.
You're now traveling to Laramie. BYU is going to probably be down their top two running backs. I just think this is a weird, weird setup, and this is like the right time to get a dead cat like Wyoming. Like, there's a chance Wyoming is terrible, but I'm getting over a touchdown and a field goal with a team. It's time to sell BYU. I don't think this team is very good, and I don't trust them as a huge favorite to go on the road and assert themselves against a Wyoming team. So give me the Pokes in Laramie to – I think they're going to win. I said it. I think they're going to win outright. I think this is just way too much respect for BYU, a team that had a win total of 4.5. This is just an overreaction over the first 2 weeks. Wyoming might be terrible, but I'm willing to pay to see it.
This is grotesque. I need to let you know that.
I think this is the grossest game on the board, grossest bet you could possibly have on the board.
It truly is, because, like you said, Wyoming might be terrible, but BYU is also not good. Like, I'm firmly on that bandwagon with you, and, like, either way, neither of these teams in any game they play this season should be favored by double digits, and that's kind of where I come down. So, like, you're like, this is a hold your nose, but know that you're making the right play in it for sure. But it is absolutely filthy disgusting.
All right, let's recap the picks and we'll get out of here.
All right, so Arizona, Kansas State, I've got over 58.5. I have the LSU team total over 29.5 against South Carolina. Wisconsin, give me plus 15.5 as the underdog there. Underdog pick, North Texas is beating Texas Tech at plus 285 on the money line. And Sicko's pick, Nevada plus 16.5 in Minnesota. Also want to add, we are 3-1 on our underdog picks. So
pretty good,
maybe
man.
We got something cooking there.
That's pretty good. I wonder who blew the only underdog's pick. for me, I took the over 58.5 in Arizona, Kansas State. I joined Cody. I took the first half under in LSU, South Carolina. I did the same. I took the first half under 25.5 in Alabama, Wisconsin. I took ECU plus 115 against App State. And then I took the grossest bet you could possibly have in week three. That's Wyoming plus 10.5 at home against BYU. Cody, great show as always. Good luck to Joanne's South Carolina team against LSU this weekend with College Game Day there. We'll be back same time next Tuesday. Best of luck with all your bets. Enjoy the football conference play in full right around the corner. We'll see you next Tuesday.
Make no mistake, Trump-backed Bernie Moreno was a MAGA mistake for black families in Ohio.
We're not going to replace racism in this country from decades ago with a new form of racism, which is what DEI is.
If Bernie Moreno is elected senator, he will support the MAGA playbook and implement the thinly disguised Racist Project 2025 agenda. That means ending diversity, equity, and inclusion programs that exist to correct the impacts of racism. MAGA extremists like Moreno believe programs that have helped our families are entitlement programs, but they have no problem giving their buddies a boost by passing more tax giveaways for rich folks like themselves. Black Americans like me have worked hard and persevered in fighting for a fair shot. We've come too far to let self-serving extremists like Bernie Moreno take us back. That's why we must re-elect Senator Sherrod Brown. He has fought for equal opportunity for black families and will continue to do so. Go to OhioVoterGuide.org and register by October 7th. Paid for by WinSenate, which is responsible for the content of this ad. WinSenate.org, not authorized by any candidate or candidates committee.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.